Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Depends upon where you are in this world. My part of the world is Miami, Florida. And my name is Bill Gust. I'm a captain with the Miami-Dade Fire Rescue Department. Divine intervention is defined as a miracle or act of God that causes something good to happen or stops something bad from happening. An example of divine intervention would be someone awakening from a coma after several years. In a conversation I had with our special guest today, Danny Sheridan of the FDNY, he has also experienced some divine intervention, something, a different power, something that caused us to take an action that saved our own life and the lives of our fellow firefighters. So we're going to look into some of those. But before we do that, I want to thank our sponsor, Key Hose. That's keyhose.com. I was just talking to them this morning, one of their reps on the LDH, the large diameter hose. And what we were talking about was the pros and cons of the rubber covered LDH versus the fabric covered with the double jacketed. They both have their pros and cons, and it would really depend upon the needs of your department. You need to try both. The key rep asked me to pass on a suggestion. For those of you that have difficulty loading the LDH because your hose bed looks like an air mattress, try capping off the end of the section of hose, and then preferably you have some type of roller. If you don't have a roller, use a hook, something smooth, pick it up and walk away from the cap towards the other end. It creates a partial vacuum and will suck that hose down really, really compact so you can load more hose into your hose bed. So I just wanted to pass on that tip from Key, free of charge. So our special guest today is Danny Sheridan. He's going to tell a little bit about himself, and he's also going to take the opportunity to tell us about his new book that either is soon for publication or is will be in the foreseeable future. So, Danny, a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Bill. Good afternoon, actually. I know this is a little kind of unusual that we're bringing this up as a topic. You know, you normally we're very, you know, intent on talking about, fire and everything fire. But I'll tell you how this whole thing started, actually. I was driving my mom's car from the auto train down to Florida, you know, and I didn't have any radio, but she's got all these podcasts on there. They were all kind of spiritual podcasts, you know, and they're all about angels and whatnot. And I was listening to them, and I was actually getting very interested. One was Touched by Heaven, a guy named Trapper Jack. And I just found them fascinating. And you know, the thought occurred to me, like, man, I mean, people tell me all these miraculous things. I'm like, you know, these things happened all the time, you know, in the firehouse, you know, come back from a job and like, you know, what was that all about, you know? So, you know, you talk about the book and it's just coincidentally, I was going to name it Parables from the Fireground, not with any religious overtones. It was just I thought it was a cool name because, you know, Christ taught parables and we all know, you know, the Good Samaritan, you know, like even I remember in freshman year in high school, one of our assignments was that we had to come up with a parable, you know, and then the whole class put together a book of parables, you know. So it's a term that's used a lot to denote a lesson learned, you know. So I figured that my idea for the book was that it was a combination of like Dennis Smith's report from Engine 82 and like Norman's book, you know, like something together where there's some good stories in it and some teaching, like, you know, like that's the one thing that I always liked about Vinnie Dunn's book was that I liked the story in the beginning. You know, it was always a good one or two pager, you know, and it puts you in the right frame of mind. So, you know, so I spoke to Bobby, you know, about, you know, they had asked me about doing a book and I was like, well, you know, what's a guy like me going to write about? Like, you know, who am I, you know? And it just happened. It's just this thought of parables from the fireground. And I thought of these these stories, and I picked 10 from my time as a fireman, 10 as an officer, and 10 as a chief. It kind of works out to that way. And because some really amazing stuff happened in the beginning and of my career. And so as I'm looking through this this book, and I out of the 31 stories I have, well, 32 including the epilogue, I would say a third of them, there's some kind of unexplained phenomenon that none of us could ever explain. Like, you know, how did that happen? Like, how did that building just collapse and we were just in there like 2 minutes ago, you know? So that was the impetus for the parables. And then, so the book is done. It's in Penwell or Clarion. I don't know. It's Penwell still or Clarion. I'm not sure what the book part is anymore. They have it. I'm working on the pictures. And I think I spoke to you about it and I spoke to Bobby. And, you know, what I'm looking to do, I thought it'd be real cool because if I have these stories, I'm sure Mike has stories. I know you have stories. You sent me one little one. I would be amazed to hear some of the stories that guys have shared, like, you know, like the things that have happened, because just in the short little bit that I put out there so far, I've already gotten about 10, and I look at them, I'm like, wow, like, really, like that really happened, huh? You know, so that's kind of like where we're at now. So I'm hoping to start working on a second project and, you know, get it out there. And you know, I don't know why guys would be nervous about it, guys and gals. I mean, it could be totally anonymous. You know what I mean? Like, no one's going to care whose name it is in there. But the stories, I mean, you know, the stories are amazing because here's how I look at it. You know, I mean, I was born a pretty Irish Catholic. You know, I went to Catholic school, even college, you know. And it was always never a second thought. I mean, just my religion, whatever, my spirituality is all part of my life. You know, I grew up in that kind of house, you know. And, you know, us as firefighters, right? I always, like, people talk about it like being a vocation, like it's a calling. You know, I had an opportunity when I was working in Wall Street. I went to college and I worked for Merrill Lynch and I was doing really well. And they asked me to stay on and, you know, work on the trading floor. And my mother was upset. You know, she's like, you know, you have this great opportunity. And my uncle was a fireman. And, you know, I was conflicted. And he told me, he says, Danny, he says, you know, you're never going to be a millionaire, but you're going to be happy, you know. And, you know, you're doing noble work. You know, it's God's work, you know. So if we're doing God's work and this is a job that's a calling, then you got to think that he's got to help us once in a while, right? Would that make sense, right? I mean, we're not doing this on our own volition. So the last thing I'll just say is that I know I heard a quote one time, a guy said that you may be in charge, but you're not in control. And that's how I kind of view every fire scene that we're at. So that's kind of where we're at. So just hoping to hear some from, you know, from guys out in the field, some, you know, if they'd ever want to share some of their stories. And we're gonna, I kind of want to do it like what's his name's book? Give me a second. Goldfeder, Billy Goldfeder.
Yeah, okay. You
know, like he's got these, yeah, he'll put stories in his book. And, yeah, I could envision something like that. You know, just a kind of a feel good. What's that? The other book, Chicken Soup or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
All these stories. So that's kind of where we're at right now. So, you know, I could tell a few stories, but I'll let you guys.
I'm kind of bashful today because I feel outnumbered by New Yorkers 2-1.
Yeah.
So Captain Mike Dugan, a little bit about yourself and your thoughts and perhaps some experiences on the topic of the day.
Well, I think very honestly, by the way, I'm sorry, I'm Mike Dugan. I'm a retired captain. I did 27 years in the FDNY. Loved every minute of it. Just a great job. I worked in a lot of great shops. And I think it's, you know, divine intervention, fate, all of those things. They play a part in everybody's role. I mean, look at where we worked. Look at what happened. Look at the lives we interacted with. If we weren't there, would somebody else have done the same thing? I was involved in a couple of rescues in my career. I did what I had to do. Somebody else had been there. Would they have made the same move? I don't know. Was I sent there for a reason? I mean, I'll tell the story. I love to tell the story. My roof rope rescue. I was working a 43 truck in Spanish Harlem, and the senior man, the chauffeur was always the chauffeur. The junior man wrote the riding list. And the senior man had their choice of riding positions, and it went by seniority in the company as to who got what position. So I was coming back from a detail, and I pulled up in front of the firehouse and dropped my gear off, and they said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm coming back from my detail." And we were at the 24 group chart in the fire department then, so you were getting detailed all the time. You were out of the firehouse a lot. And they said, "You just working the day tour?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm just working the day tour. I'm going home." Hang on. Manpower screwed up. We got a problem. Something's messed up. And I'm like, okay. So they say, "Can you work overtime?" I'm like, "Yeah. Yeah, I would love to work a night tour of overtime. Absolutely." So the guy comes over who was working, and he looks at me and he says, "You're the senior man," because I was out driving another company. He goes, "You're the senior man, but we thought we were getting a detail, so we gave him the roof. So would you mind taking the roof?" And I'm like, I could have had the irons. I could have had the OV. And I said, all right. You already wrote the riding list on me. I'll take the roof. Not a big deal. So it already started. Then they said to me, "By the way, you're the cook," because nobody else could cook. And I said, "Oh my God, it's already 6:30. We got to figure out a meal and everything else." They said, "All right, let's get everybody on the rig." Get everybody on the rig, and we're on the rig and ready to pull out the door, and the box comes in. And it's around the corner. It's 104th Street. We were on 101st, 102nd Street. It's in a place we called back then Little Mexico. It was all a lot of Mexican immigrants, and we had a job. And it was right before Christmas, December 23rd. And I go up to the roof. I go up to the adjoining building. I go up to the roof, and I look over the back, and there are people there screaming. They're pointing, and there's somebody out the window, above the fire, out the window, hanging on the window. His buddy left him. He was in the bathroom. His buddy left him and left the apartment door open. So he was getting his butt kicked. And then the people started touching my rope. And I'm like, "Leave that alone." And I didn't say it that nicely, but I said it with a fireman's drawl, so to speak. And I opened up the bulkhead to try to relieve the interior stairs. And I looked, and this guy's going off. Well, the substantial object is off on about a 40-degree angle. So I had to have a guy hold the rope, and I went over on the rope, went down, grabbed the guy, and was on the angle. And we went past the fire, and we went down. We ran out of rope right before the ground. But somebody from 14 Truck, who was involved in both of my rescues, a guy by the name of Tommy Montgomery, a great dude who passed away way too early of cancer. But Tommy Montgomery was there, and he was so big, he was able to lift me up so they could untie from up above, so we could unhook. And we came down, and if I hadn't had the roof, if I hadn't been on the rig ready to go, to go shopping, would the guy have jumped? He might have. And it was a 5-story jump. So again, these things happen. You know, and it happens to every one of us. There are times when you are sitting there, and after the fire, you go, "How did I know that? How did I do that?" Okay. And I remember going to fires, and I go, "Pop that door." And the guy's looking at me and go, "Cap, how did you know it was in that door?" I said, "Well, you know, sometimes," I said, "the lump dying intervention, sometimes I knew. I mean, I remember going in one building and looking out the back door and seeing a glow right out the back door on windows of the next building. So I knew the fire was close to where we were. We hoofed it up the stairs, but all the smoke was at the end of the hallway because there was an open door down there that was drawing the smoke down there. And everybody's running towards that end. And I go to the guys, come on, right here, pop this door. And I felt the door was hot to the touch. And they were like, how did you know? Well, that wasn't divine intervention. That was just, I tricked them. But again, it happens. There are times on the fire ground for each and every one of us where we have done things. We have put ourselves in positions and somebody was there with us. And I believe that wholeheartedly. I believe that wholeheartedly. I believe that there is intervention. There is divine intervention on the fire ground and that people will be there and there are things. Some of it goes back to training. Some of it goes back to the help you get, but it's definitely part of what we do.
Mike, is in the 70s, when I was a young firefighter, we were operated in an industrial complex and we had a large canopy. It was constructed of 2x12s, 2x12 rim boards. So you had space like 12 inches. This canopy collapsed on a lieutenant and firefighter from engine 7. I was on engine 30. And they were trapped and they were burned. They were burning and they were screaming. We all got together. We picked this canopy up and those guys came out of there like scared rabbits. They were injured. They got themselves out of there. After the fire, we went during the overhaul phase, we went back to retrieving their helmets. And Mike, you think I'm making this up, but we had almost twice as many guys and we could not lift that canopy. Now, it can't just be adrenaline. There had to be something else working here. How could we possibly lift this thing in a time of desperation? There has to be somebody out there, something that lend us a hand. And I've got several other stories like that, but I think getting back to your roof rescue, your rope rescue, Mike, did your rescue rope, was it secured at a 45 degree angle to a substantial object?
Secured at a 45 degree angle, and then there was a guy who, Big Billy Donahue from 26 Truck, sat down on the roof with his personal harness on and gave me the angle. So John McGann lowered me from 26 Truck, and he came off on the angle, and then Billy held it, and I went over there to get it by the guy sitting on it. He was my other substantial object. That's how we did it.
Well, you know, Mike, you're not exactly, you've been called many a thing in your day, but petite is not one of them. So this Big Billy must have been one mountain of a man.
He was my size. He was a good dude. Was a good dude.
I want to use my experience to discuss something with both of you fellas. And, you know, and sometimes there's a benefit that just having a couple of guys, and I want to pick the FDNY's brain. I am privy to a report from your Special Operations Command or Safety Command about maydays and who answers the maydays, how long does it take to answer the mayday, how long does it take to recover the firefighter. And I see that in 76% of the cases, the mayday was answered and the firefighter was rescued by other firefighters he was working with in the fire building at the time, not a rapid intervention team, or as you call it, a fast truck. Now, does that mean, fellas, that there was no fast truck on the scene? It was done by first alarm companies.
No. It means that, to me, it means that the guy or girl had the courage, excuse my French, but had the balls to give a mayday. And giving the mayday alerted people as soon as they thought there was a problem, that there was a problem. And then the people around them knew where they had last seen them and were able to get there before the fast truck even, they were there. The fast truck is the third truck on every 1075. The fast truck goes in. So we get the fast truck, okay? But the most times it's taken care of immediately, because if you have the courage to issue the mayday appropriately when you are lost, disorientated, you're separated, whatever else, you fall, you're entangled, or whatever else, then people are going to know where you were. The people working with you are going to know where you were. The problem we have with maydays, and it drives me crazy, is guys and girls don't give maydays because they don't want to embarrass their company or their department or anybody else. So somebody else is going to be taking care of your wife and kids. I mean, your husband, your whoever. You know, somebody else is going to be petting your dog because you didn't have the courage to give a mayday. That's ridiculous. Ridiculous. We have to, and we empower people to give maydays. If you're in trouble, give a mayday. There is nothing wrong with that. Vinnie Dunn says it, and we talked about Vinnie Dunn earlier. In his book, he says most firefighters that were killed in a flashover were lost or disorientated in the smoke prior to the flashover. So if you're lost and or disorientated and you do not give a mayday, your chances statistically go up of getting killed in that flashover, in that rapid fire progression that we see in today's fire environment. And I think it's so important that we train our people. There's a free training thing from the, I think it's from the NFFF, the National Fallen Firefighters, the calling the mayday. You know how many people have never seen that drill, have never experienced that drill, the parameters, when you should give it, what you should do, and everything else? It's a shame. It's a shame on us for not being prepared to do this.
Danny, you related a very interesting near miss, would have been a multiple LODD. Yeah. You want to tell us about that? We discussed this last month when we were picking out this topic.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I was, I think I was just married. So it had to be the first winter I was married, that'd be 1988. We had a job in the projects right before Christmas, maybe a week before Christmas, you know. And the poor woman, she had like three or four kids. I think she was a single mom. And she lost everything. All the Christmas gifts were under the tree and the, you know, clothes and all this other stuff. So one of the guys, you know, when we got back to the firehouse, he said, like, hey, you know what? Let's do something for this woman. You know, let's make Christmas for this family, you know. So it was great. The buzz was around the firehouse. And it was a great buzz, you know, like everybody started getting involved and someone got diapers and baby food and toys. And then before you know, we had this whole thing set up, you know. So now it's Christmas Eve. And like Mike said, I'm not supposed to be working. I was getting off a straight day tour. And on Christmas Eve, the chief took comp time and the aide took off. So we were short a chief and we needed someone to drive the battalion. So they hired me for overtime, but I said, well, I'm not going to let a guy. I think we just started doing detailing from outside the battalion. Like we only used to detail within the battalion. So this night they were getting this guy from somewhere in the other part of the city, like a midtown or something, you know. And I got to let this guy. I'm overtime. I'm going to drive the battalion. I'll step up. I was only like on a job a few years. I said, I guess I have to drive the battalion. I'm not going to let this kid come from out of the city, out of the battalion and drive, right? So the firehouse now is really buzzing, man. The engine was all set. The back of the truck looked like Santa's sled, man. You know, it was like everything's all on the back of the truck, the gifts, the diapers, the baby food, the clothes, everything, you know. And I was really jealous now because we had this guy, he was ABC and he was the captain of 82 engine. And this kid walks into the firehouse and it looks like he stopped off at the time. We didn't have a quartermaster. So it looked like he stopped off at the supply store and just picked up a uniform and a helmet and a coat. Like the stuff was like right out of the box, shiny. And he was from some Midtown company. He was a black guy. And he was so, I remember him like just looking around like, wow, like this is the South Bronx, you know, like, wow, you know. And anyway, so you got the can. They gave the kid the can. And I was hoping, you know, that we would be able with the battalion car to go over and be part of the ceremony. But the captain, he wanted to go to his own house. It was Christmas Eve, and he wanted to stop by and see his guys. And then we used to do midnight mass over in 73 and 42. So I think the plan was somehow, you know, like go to his firehouse and then the meal and mass or whatever. I forget the exact details, you know. So anyway, we go up to his firehouse, and you know, he stops in, and we say, you know, hello, and have a, you know, they're having some, you know, hors d'oeuvres and stuff, and you know, it was nice. And then we hung out there for a little while, and then you know, he's like, oh, we got to get going, you know, we're gonna get to mass, whatever, and we got to head back to our, you know, to our area. And anyway, so we're driving back to the firehouse. I'm driving, and I see the truck company is at a water leak, you know, and I'm kind of razzing them a little bit. I get on the radio and, hey, what do you know? You guys with the water leak? And I get, you know, hey, screw you, whatever. You know, I was just joking around. And so we come down this Brook Avenue and make a right. And I could see at the end of the block, there's this woman, she's doing jumping jacks. Like she's just frantic, you know? So I'm like, what the hell's going on up there, you know? And as I get closer, she's like, she's doing the pointing like this, you know, like pointing. So as I come up to the corner, the fire's blowing out into the street, like 40 feet. I get on the radio. I'm like, guys, man, screw that water leak. I said, we got a job, you know? So the engine comes out. They come barreling down the block. They make the turn like on two wheels. It's a two-way street, Willis Avenue. And they grab the hydrant. And the fire is like, it's a five-story. It's occupied on the first floor, but it was vacant on above. The four other floors were vacant. And it was railroad apartments, front to rear, you know? So, you know, the truck comes, and then I had no idea what I was doing. Like, I'm supposed to be in the car, I guess, talking to the dispatcher. Now I'm on the floor above with the ABC, you know? And I distinctly remember the engine, the second new engine was above, and there's fire on both sides. And, you know, and the captain was saying, hit the fire here, hit the fire there, and blah, 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 back and forth. And, you know, while this is all going on, you know, the engine in the store did a great job, man. They banged it out. They knocked it they knocked the whole fire out right to the rear. So now, while this is all going on, I found out later that guys on the roof was scrambling. This guy, Bobby Norman, he was like scrambling to get off the roof. The OV and a guy from Rescue 3 were like diving out windows, and you know, I knew it was bad, but you know, I just could see my little part of it, which was like at the second floor. So then the captain told me, he says, you know, go down to the first floor and see what's happening. So I get down to the first floor and I see the detail guy, and he's got his can still on his shoulder on the strap, and he's got the hook in his hand, and he's just like frozen like a deer in the headlights. I'm like, okay, you know, you don't expect much, you know. So I go into the store, and you know, I'm telling a story, and I'm like, I'm saying, did it really happen? You're like, did this really happen, you know? But I go into the store, you know, and it's got to be about 40 feet deep now, right? And I get to the back, and there's a whole bunch of guys there and pulling ceilings and washing down, and I think it was six or seven guys. And there's this commotion at the front of the store. This guy's screaming, fire. It's like, oh, there's fire. And like, and after about, I don't know, like just a minute or two of this, the lieutenant looks at the nozzle man and says, hey, come on, let's go up front and see what's going on. You know, so the seven guys walk all the way up to the front of the store, and we get there, and there's like embers burning in the door frame, in the door jamb. Like, you called us up, this is what you think of fire, but whatever. At that same time, the whole back of the building collapsed right on that spot where we were just standing. And now there's one of the guys from the second engine was on the floor above, is hanging upside down, wrapped up in the BX. So the guy, two of the guys, the lieutenant from the engine and the nozzle man, grabbed him and they walked him out. And I think when we got back to the firehouse, I don't know if that guy disappeared. Yeah.
Okay. The lesson, and this is a very important lesson, and it's something that I, when I was in the field, I'm in the training division now. And believe me, I had a lot of people that it was their first day in operations on the job out of the fire academy. And I would say, just because I've been a firefighter for 42 years or 38 years,
right,
if you see something that doesn't look right, say something. I could have a brain fart. I'm old. Yeah. Captain Mike, you and I have talked about this. A company officer taking command is in mental. He's got his blinders on mental overload. I've had a probationary fireman save me from stepping out into traffic, from walking into a charged power line. And I made it clear that everybody don't assume that your senior people see it or aware of it the way that you are. Many a time we have been helped by people that have very little experience, but good judgment, just good judgment, and they're in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. Another story. I got a good guy in my company.
Hey, Bill.
Fire. Yes, sir.
Before you do that, why don't you give Key a shout?
Oh, yeah. Mike, thank you for keeping me honest. Now, what was the name of our sponsor again? Key. All right, let's talk about Key, Combat Ready, and True ID, two of my favorite subjects because I do work with them on a regular basis. It's and I've mentioned this in previous hangouts. You want to put hose to the test, man. Bring it to your academy. Bring it to your fire academy where it is going to be dragged over asphalt, concrete, over windowsills, around corners on a daily basis. That's where you will evaluate your hose in the most realistic conditions. Whatever grade of key hose there is, and there's different grades. They're all good. They're all good. The best being the True ID and the Combat Ready. They're constructed a little bit differently, but the True ID being more of a traditional rubber or synthetic rubber liner and two jackets, and it does not increase in cross-sectional area. So if you bought a 2 1/4 inch, that's what you would have. So regardless, the True ID and the Combat Ready is the ones that I like. But as I've mentioned in the past, take the key challenge. If you're in the market for new hose, take the key challenge. The challenge is try to kink it. Try to kink that hose. So, thank you, Captain Mike, for keeping me honest. So we get this fire on a wall. And we, just before thermal imagers, so we're using the back of our hands, which still is a pretty good indication. But you know that heavy wood lath and plaster, still you can burn the heck out of your hand and there's nothing behind it. So, but there was no external source. So we opened up the wall and sure enough, they had plastered over an old electrical receptacle. So now you know what we do, fellas. We're going to open up a stud bay on either side. And we're going to keep opening up those bays until it's clean. So Dave opens up to the left and to the right, opens up the stud bay, and they're clean. And then he goes on to open up some more stud bays. And I told him, Dave, that's enough. That's enough. They're clear. In fact, I was actually getting pissed off. Dave, stop. He opened up one more stud bay. There's fire. There was another electrical receptacle, and they were wired together, and there was fire in that other stud bay. If he hadn't have done that, we would have left and come back on a very embarrassing and maybe even a tragic rekindle. So I asked him, Dave, what possessed you? He says, I don't know, but I knew that I had to open up some more stud bays. Again, what possessed him? We don't know. Sometimes, as we've been relating, there's just another hand at work here that sometimes saves our butts, and our butt was saved because of that. So Captain Mike, I just want to make sure I understand that your third truck is your fast truck. So how long could companies be operating at a 1075 before the fast truck is on the scene?
3 or 4 minutes.
Okay, so they're going to get there pretty quick.
Very quick, very quick.
Okay.
All right. You know, sometimes it might take a little longer depending on the outer boroughs. But again, it's the fast trucks are going to be there very quickly, but we're going to have two trucks there, rescues on their way, squad is coming in. And, you know, depending on what's going on, they will be coming. And if there's a report of a fireman trapped in the initial couple of minutes, I mean, they're going to, give more units to fill the box. And then on a 1075, they'll send a fast truck. But you could have two trucks, a rescue, and a squad company there in the first 4 or 5 minutes. The fast truck might take another minute or so to get there, depending on what's going on. But again, it's most of our problems on the fire ground statistically happen in the first 3 or 4 minutes on the scene. So that's where it's going to be. That's why the initial companies and paying attention to the radio and listening to what's going on around you are so important. And I want to tell you another story, Bill, about divine intervention, because I think it is important. I went as a captain, I went on a run to this beautiful, beautiful brownstone in Brooklyn. A gentleman comes out and he's like, I got this CO detector. It's beeping. And he brings it out and it's still beeping. And I'm like, okay. I said, did you change the battery? I put a brand new battery. I said, okay. It might be the detector. He says, I don't know. I'm just kind of concerned because I just had my oil burner worked on. And I clicked. And I'm like, okay, where was this going off? And he goes, up on the top floor. So we go up to the top floor. I've got the CO meter that all the trucks and now the engines have them and the battalions carry them. And I take the CO meter and I go in to where it is and I'm picking up CO. And I'm like, okay. And then he goes, and that's my daughter's room. And I go into his daughter's room and I'm getting 500 parts per million in his daughter's room. I send one of the guys up into the attic because it's a beautiful brownstone. Well, it's a brick chimney. The mortar's rotting away in the attic space, and the chimney goes up and turns. And where it is rotted away on the underside, the CO is leaking. In the attic, it was over 900 parts per million. If we had not talked to this guy, if I had nonchalanted this run, that little girl probably would have died in her sleep that night. Okay? And I thank God for this all the time. When he said, I just had the oil burner, and I'm like, No, I'm not walking away. I'm not going in. Okay. I walked in and I stopped. This happens. And divine intervention, experience, all of these things come together. I remember one time I was at a box, turned out to be a third alarm. It was a roof fire. And we're up there and the chief goes, what do you got, Mike? I said, smells something. He goes, okay, 18 for an odor. And the guy says, you know, you can see smoke every once in a while from the cockloft vents. And I'm like, hang on a second, chief. And I go over there and I look and I see this thing. I go out on the fire escape and I look, and a minute later I see a little puff of smoke. I said, no. Start a line up to the top floor. Let's start looking. And we start looking for this fire. Okay. And it turns out it was the blown in nitrocellulose insulation around an electrical fixture. It turned out to be a third alarm. When one of the companies came in on the second alarm, they said they could see flames over the roof about 40 or 50 feet. That's how much fire there was from all of this stuff. But we would have walked away from that if something hadn't said, wait a second, check it out. So I honestly think this is, divine intervention is real. And I also think that it's a part of your experience and everything else. And they come together. And, you know, we have to have, somebody's on our side. Thank goodness.
You know, Mike, the other thing is, you know, I don't want to blow any smoke, but, you know, it has to do with humility. As a young firefighter, we went to a report of a sink sparking. And the officer blew it off, and we left. We got called back again to the sink sparking. Well, I looked in the sink this time, and there was sparking. Well, I've seen this before when I was a firefighter up in the Chicago area. It's a combination of a bad ground, bad open neutral, and leaking electricity. You're damn right. Yes, it was. But this is where we've got to be good listeners. We've got to be good listeners. Give people the benefit of the doubt, Mike. And I think that you did. You listened to those folks. Story from my dad, Lieutenant Engine 77. It used to be the second busiest engine on the Chicago Fire Department. It was back in the early 60s. They were responding on a change of quarters for a second alarm. So, and when you change quarters back then in Chicago, and I'm sure it's still the same way today, your lights and siren, you need to get to that other firehouse where they relocated you. And they come up to an intersection, a blind intersection with tall buildings on every corner. And his engineer, Greg Maher, good Irish name, they've got the green light. They got the green light, and Greg puts the brakes on and comes to a complete stop at a green light. And my dad turns to him and says, Greg, what are you doing? And just then, an apparatus goes through that red light. It's on the second alarm, goes through that red light at about 60 miles an hour. How did it happen? How did that? What was that? Why did he stop? He doesn't know. But if that's not divine intervention, I don't know what is.
I had the same experience with a chauffeur. I was a fireman, and we were working up in Spanish Harlem, and we were going on a run, and the chauffeur stopped at a green light, lights and sirens, and a garbage truck came through the intersection. The guy must have been like half asleep or whatever else, and came through the intersection. This was a garbage truck, one of those big Mack garbage trucks, the commercial ones. That thing would have T-boned us. We would have died. And what stopped him from going through that light? I mean, and he had a green light. What made him stop? He saw something in the corner of his eye. Something made him, and I mean, he locked him up. And we were like, what the? And this thing came right through the, and I was like, oh, we were dead. We were dead. You know? Yeah. And I mean, listen, God protects him. I don't care what anybody says. Okay. I honestly, wholeheartedly believe that. There have been cases in my life where I have been in situations where I wasn't sure we were going to get out. Up in the Bronx as a lieutenant, okay, with 60 engine in a wind-driven fire in a project building. And I mean, we got two and a half fighting this fire. And the wind is coming in so hard that there's really no smoke because the smoke is being pushed so far past you, you can see it. And the guys are like on top of each other, moving up and down with the two nozzles. And then we had a fire when I was a young fireman in Spanish Harlem, Schomburg Plaza. It was my first wind-driven fire. And the door is hopping. The peephole is melted out of the door and the brass lock is melted out of the door.
And Mike, that is an infamous fire, correct? I read about that.
Yes, Schomburg, that's where seven people died.
Okay,
it was an early morning fire. It was a compactor fire.
Yeah.
And it was just in a, but there was a 12-year-old girl jumped from the 34th floor with her two brothers. Their mother forced them out. Their mother was my first real fire victim in the fire. And it was, I'll never forget it. I mean, you know, she suffered. That woman, that poor woman suffered. and force the kids to jump out from 34 floors. But forcing the door next to it with one of the guys I worked with, Kirk Lester, was, I mean, like, I'm like, I hope somebody's watching over me, because this is one of the scariest places I think I've ever been. I crapped enough bricks to build that building that night, that day. Okay. And I mean, it was unbelievable. So again, you understand this. There are things that are happening. And, you know, it happens frequently. I mean, you know, there are guys will tell you, you know, why did I turn the nozzle this way? Why did I move? I have no idea. Something just told me to do that to protect us.
I hear another story. Same guy, Dave, going, a guy having a seizure. We get there. Dave is treating, he's the paramedic. He rolls the guy over and pulls up his shirt. He's been stabbed. Dave. All indications, the guy was having a seizure. That's what the people in the store said. He's having a seizure. He was stabbed. What made you turn that guy over and pull up his shirt? Don't know. I don't know. Again, there's got to be another hand out there somewhere.
Yep.
Danny, any other experiences?
Yeah. You know, all the stories Mike talked about, like Schaumburg Plaza, I remember coming in. I lived in Queens in Woodside at the time. I was coming over to Triborough, and I remember looking over into Harlem, and I was like, oh, they got a compactor fire. I get to the firehouse, and, you know, I think we wound up going to the fire, too. But
now, this one particular, you mentioned that just for our viewers, Danny.
Sorry?
You basically have a fire in a shaft. Now, from a distance, you could see it was a compact because of the flame was localized, and it was
coming up off the top. It was ash, whatever, collector, fly ash collector. So I knew, I've been to a million of them. Like, we used to get compactor fires like on a daily basis, you know. So it was just it's just another compactor fire. But hey, that's a whole story in itself, the Schaumburg Plaza. But this particular night, you know, we work first and second due, right? The first due truck usually is supposed to be taking care of the fire, and then second due truck, depending on the type of occupancy, is either going to be on the floor above, or if it's a taxpayer, whatever it is, commercial, you know, you're not going to be at the fire area, right? So we get this call for a fire in a vacant old factory down below by the river, and we were second due, and it was all these cinder blocks, like on the loading dock, that, you know, we had to get through the cinder blocks to get to the fire. So it was a heavy fire in this commercial building. And I'm, you know, it was odd because, like, where's the first two truck? You know, like, he wasn't around. They weren't around. I don't know where they were. It turns out they were up on a roof, right? Their officer was a bit out there. It was a really good truck company, but he was covering for the night or whatever. He was just a space cadet. And anyway, so me and this other guy, you know, we take our 8-pound mauls and we're banging away on the cinder blocks, you know. And we make like a little opening, and the whole place is lit up in orange, like bathed in orange, you know. And so now, you know, calling for, you know, I didn't have a radio at the time. I had the irons, I guess, you know, and I was like, I told the lieutenant, I said, you know, we need a line in here. We got heavy fire. So the engine started stretching. So as we're waiting, we can't go any further because there's so much fire. I see something, I guess the ceiling was 20 foot high. I see something drop. Like, boom. Like, I think a guy just went through the roof. So now we go in, me and my partner. And the chief is freaking out because when he went through, the flames went up through the roof, and it looked like, I don't know what it looked like from out in the street, but the chief is giving, talking about maydays, mayday, 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 and blah, blah, blah. So we get in about 20, 30 feet, and I bump into this guy, and I grab him. He's all banged up, disheveled, and I grab him, and we, you know, we start leaving, and he really didn't get hurt at all. Like the worst thing is he burnt his face a little bit. Like his nose was all burnt. His helmet was gone. And he was, for all intents and purposes, he was fine. So, you know, they come in, put the fire out. So the spot where he fell, there's homeless people living in there. And there's all this metal machinery. He fell in the one spot where the bed was. He comes right down through the fire, lands on the bed. He gets himself up, and he's walking. You know, I kind of grab him, and he's on his own. I mean, he's getting himself out. We just kind of guided him out, you know. But what are the odds that he landed on that one bed in this big 100 by 100, fully, you know, loaded with machines and all kinds of shrapnel and whatnot, and he lands on the bed?
Just, now, Danny, are you going to be relating these stories in your book? Have you? Like the story you just told. Very compelling.
The Christmas one, I call it the Christmas stories and the parables. I don't think I told this one in the book. This will be maybe for the second one. Yeah.
Okay.
But here's what I'm thinking, Bill. You know, in our discussion, I see that we're kind of running low on time. So, you know, to wrap it up, like Mike, I think in the beginning was just like, yeah, I think I got like one story. And then you said like, yeah, maybe, yeah. And then I think what's going to happen with guys when they start looking back and saying like, remember that fire where, you know, that wall fell down and we, like, for some reason, we just like backed out for no reason. I think guys are going to start thinking to themselves like, oh, you know, crud, man. Maybe it's something else going on here. Maybe it wasn't luck. Because I used to say, joking around, I said, fine, you know, God takes care of drunks, babies, and fine. But we used to say very tongue-in-cheek, you know.
An Irishman, too. Remember that.
An Irishman.
Yeah, because I had a guy say, God takes care of drunks, firemen, and Irishmen. So I'm covered on all three bases.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. But this is what I'm trying to get out there is like, if guys would just look back, like Mike, perfect example, man. Like, I'm sure Mike didn't have those stories, but as he's thinking, it's like, yeah, you know, that happened. Like, and I'm thinking myself that as more and more stories are popping into my head. Like, I was working in a squad, and we're barreling down to Far Rockaway on a second alarm, and it was like, I never was comfortable with the way these guys are, you know, driving sometimes these boxes, you know, especially when we had to go these really long distances. And we're on this Rockaway Turnpike going out to Far Rockaway, and I'm on the horn and the siren, you know, and it's snowing. It's starting to come down pretty good, you know. And I see a car about 100 yards ahead of me, and I'm like, this guy just is in a panic. He's not pulling to the right now. He just froze. My chauffeur jams on the brake. The engine goes almost on two wheels, and then all of a sudden it just righted itself for no reason. Like, I was praying. I said a quick, like, okay, I'll follow Hail Mary. This is it. It's over. Boom. The engine just righted itself, and we went on his way. And, like, I was just like, whoa. Like, what was that, man? Like, what just happened here, man? Did that really happen? Like, that didn't happen. You know, like, this – we were on two wheels. It was, like – ice and snow, man, right outside JFK Airport. We were hitting that car. It was no, I don't know how we didn't hit that car. So I'm sure you talked about the garbage truck, Mike. You talked about that fire truck with your father. I mean, if you examine your, I've been on a job 34 years. I'm telling you, man, there's a lot of stuff that goes on that I can't explain. I cannot explain it. And, I believe it. I believe God takes care of firemen, and he takes care of babies and drunks and Irishmen.
Yeah.
And so I'm good on three counts anyway.
Yeah. It's beyond our comprehension. It really is. And I truly believe that. And we only have a couple more minutes. Sometimes we get a sign. We went into a drugstore in 1973. I was a volunteer in the Chicago area. 12-foot high tin ceiling, clear as a bell, smell of smoke. Somebody yells, oh my gosh. We turn around and a bluish orange flame comes out of a ventilation register and rolls across the underside of this tin ceiling. It was a bowstring truss building. The entire truss loft between the upper cord, which is arched, and the lower cord, which is straight, was roaring. So we tried to pull the ceiling. Thank God we were not successful. We said, the heck with this. Let's go out and protect the adjoining grocery store. That was a sign. Had we not seen that sign, we would have continued to the back. The roof would have collapsed and probably killed about a dozen guys. Hey, listen, we're going to wrap this up. But before we wrap it up, I want to thank our sponsor again, Key Hose. That's keyhose.com. Again, take the key challenge. I challenge you. That is, get your combat ready or the true ID, actually any of their grades, and try to kink key hose. You will not find any hose that has better kink resistance, abrasion resistance, and heat resistance than Key. So, and again, thank you very much, Key, for sponsoring these daily hangouts. Mike, any final words, sir?
Nope. This was a lot of fun. Thank you. It's been a great topic, and we'll see you next month. Thank you all, and be safe out there. Thanks, Danny.
Thanks, Mike.
Danny, thank you so much for volunteering to participate. We really needed you this month. I mean, Mike and I could do it by ourselves. We could.
Yeah.
But thank God you're here.
Listen, if anybody's watching and they want to share a story anonymously, just email me, Twitter or whatever, Instagram, Facebook. Just get in touch with me. You don't have to give your name. Just give the story, and we'll put it in with the, we'll put in fictitious. Unless you want to use your name, that's fine.
Now, Danny, how will our viewers know when your book is out for publication?
Well, the Parables is in the publisher's hands right now, so they have to do the final edits. Someone's supposedly looking at it. And then I'm still waiting for them to tell me, like, listen, thanks, but no thanks. But we'll see what happens.
I don't care. That's not going to happen, brother.
Yeah. And then,
all right, everybody. I hope our lives are getting back to normal, semblance of normalcy, with all of the things that are going on in this world. And I hope that in your corner of the world, wherever you are, you have some peace and happiness with you and your family. God bless everybody out there that's in our most noble profession, and may keep us safe and healthy. Until next month, this is Bill Gustin.
Thanks, Bill.